Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk, and James Corbett of The Corbett Report will be joining you immediately following the first commercial break of the program in 20 minutes at 4:20 Eastern Time. So let's get started with the market report, and today is Thursday, July 21st, 2016. Well, gold did remain above a three-week low today. Little pressure on the dollar, a little pressure on shares, both the European shares and the U.S. shares. U.S. shares did come back a little bit. But let's go and take a peek at gold right now. Had a strong day, up $17 for gold in the New York spot price aftermarket at $13.33. Silver was up $44, still couldn't push above $20, but $19.91 is a good price for silver today. Platinum was up $18 at $11.07. And palladium was up 13 at 689. So all the precious metals did very well today. The USDX today was down, not much, 0.18 at 96.94. So I'm really not sure what's really bringing that's making the precious metals sector so strong. The crude oil was down 1.13. That certainly is moving lower at 44.62. Paper markets though today, see if we can get to those paper markets. They were sort of all over the page. Most of the day they were down triple digits, looking at 77 points to the downside right now at 18,512. The NASDAQ is down 16 at 5,073. The S&P was down 7, 2,165. 10-year yield, 1.56. Little strength in the euro at 110. Asian markets were higher. European markets were sort of a mixed bag overnight. So, London shares was only down like 0.5%. So really nothing very drastic in any of the markets. So something is changing to see gold go higher. The ECB the European Central Bank left key interest rates unchanged. Been a little bit better than expected U.S. jobs data that kind of weighed in today. But mainly the ECB held rates at a record low as they continue to try to revive their growth and inflation. And again, with cheap credit, we all saw how well it works over here. So the rest of the world has tried the same thing, and they're going to get the same results. It just isn't going to happen. But anyway, we'll go along in this make-believe world that their little holding down their record rates at record lows is actually doing something. You know, still a little tough on that inflation, but we'll go along with their make-believe world. So they're going to keep them low. They can't change it. They're in worse condition. I'm not sure who's in worse condition anymore. They're certainly not as big as we are, but maybe we are in the same basket at equal lengths just because they're certainly they don't have the amount of debt. We're going to talk about debt. I know we talked a lot about debt here on this program, but the ECB is going to have another meeting in September. Supposedly this one's going to be even a little more important. Certainly expectations are running high that the bank will do more quantitative easing. And if expectations are running high that the bank will do something, and I can't imagine what's going on in September that they need that quantitative easing. They need it quite badly. So we'll have to see about that. Now, what I found interesting about all the articles I read about the European Union today is the central bank confirms that the monthly asset purchase of 80 billion euros are intended to run until the end of March 2017 or beyond. And in any case, until it sees a sustained adjustment in the path of inflation consistent with its inflation aim. Now, we're going to talk about our debt ceiling, and why that March 2017 deadline is interesting. You might think it's just a coincidence. You'll be able to decide for yourself. But I find it interesting that both the Europe and the U.S. have a March 2017 deadline, and we'll talk about our deadline in just a little bit. Last night, I'm sure many of you watched the convention. It was interesting to see Senator Ted Cruz. He refused to endorse Donald Trump last night. Everyone seemed shocked, and they certainly were angry at him and were booing him. In fact, it's kind of sad that his wife had to be escorted out because supporters were quite angry that he did not support or endorse Donald Trump. So tonight, Donald Trump gives his speech. It will be the speech of his lifetime. I think every word, every phrase, every sentence is going to be under a microscope, especially after the snafu with Melania's speech earlier in this week. And I do hope Donald sticks to issues because what little I watched of the convention, I've read a lot, but it seems very little has been discussed about the issues. It seems mainly it has been a Hillary bashing, which, she deserves it. It's all about not getting Hillary elected. On the other hand, I can only take so much bashing of anyone. I want to hear what's important. What are the issues? I don't want to just hear everybody pat themselves on the back on what great speeches they gave. I want to hear the importance in going forward. I did watch the speech by Governor Pence, and I did like him. So I hope that the issues to some degree will be discussed by Donald Trump Or, you know what, maybe issues just don't matter anymore. I don't know. But I think it is interesting what Cruz did. And I don't understand, you know, why he would even show up. I don't even know why they would invite him if he knew he wasn't going to support Trump. Trump knew he wasn't going to endorse him. So, you know, I don't know what all that was all about. It almost seems like Donald Trump is out to destroy Cruz for whatever reason. And Cruz, what I think Cruz is doing, he didn't endorse him. And I think he believes that Donald is going to fail with all his promises. And, hey, this would be a way for Ted Cruz to come back and say, hey, I told you so. That's a few years down the line, but I guess it proved to be entertainment for the news stations and for the convention. But Michael Moore came out, and he pretty much said today that he does believe that Donald Trump will be president. And and that was interesting coming from him. Moving on, 7 years, almost 7 years after the federal minimum wage was raised to $7.25 an hour from $6.55, it has remained stagnant despite the increasingly heated debate over better pay and worker predictions. But let's go back and compare gold and silver. Where was silver 7 years ago? Silver was priced at $13.52. Where was gold priced at in 2009, 7 years ago? $947. And again, this is a prime example of how gold and silver protects your purchasing power. If you were paid in silver, you'd be right where you should be. But this is what happens. This is an example of your purchasing power when it comes to a fiat currency. The buying power of the federal minimum wage has not kept up with inflation. Gold and silver has. But the data shows that in 1968, the federal minimum wage was equivalent to $10.90 in 2015, dollars, nearly $4 higher than today's rate. So, again, another display of how those worthless dollars that you're getting paid for minimum wage has your purchasing power has just eroded over time. Again, there are two states, California and New York, who are set to have the highest minimum wage in the nation. Deals were struck by the governors to raise them to $15 an hour by 2020 and 2018, respectively, with slower increases for smaller business. I think by the time 2018 rolls around, it's not going to matter whether the minimum wage is raised to $15 or not. So again, folks, if you want to protect your purchasing power, you have to get that gold and silver into your hands. Earlier this week, it was reported foreign holdings of U.S. Treasury securities fell for the second straight month of May. Total foreign holdings dropped 0.5% to $6.21 trillion after slipping 0.8% to $6.24 trillion in April. Of course, Japan, second highest foreign owner of treasuries, reduced its holdings by a little bit. And China, the biggest foreign investor in treasuries, actually increased its holdings slightly to $1.24 trillion. You know, the United States needs foreigners to keep buying these treasury securities. Of the debt total, nearly $14 trillion is publicly traded on financial markets. And, of course, the rest of the money the government owes itself, including holdings in the Social Security Trust Fund, which leads me to the federal debt. I told you I was going to talk about it. It has officially moved above the $19.4 trillion for the first time as of close of business on Tuesday. This is according to the data released today by the U.S. Treasury. By the close of business on Tuesday, July 19th, and I'm just going to round these out, it had risen to $19.4 trillion. We're going to go back in time, October 30th, 2015, Congress passed the Bipartisan Budget Act, which suspended the legal debt limit until March 15th, and I know you know what year I'm going to say, 2017. So again, this was that second deadline within days of the European Union's their deadline. And coincidence? I find it interesting. Don't know if it's a coincidence, but it is interesting. And I think once we see what our debt ceilings are, I mean, it's incredible. In that amount of time, in less than 9 months, the federal debt has increased by $1.2 trillion, and we have a year to go. So you can probably tack on, what, another $1.5 trillion, maybe $2 trillion by March 15th, 2017. The public debt limit is suspended through that date on March 16th. The limit is increased to accommodate obligations issued during the suspension period. Because this report was released today and gold is up significantly today, I think this might have been part of the reasons why gold is higher. Because there really wasn't anything else. I mean, the dollar was down a little bit, no big deal. You know, there wasn't, the Dow was down a lousy 77 points, big deal. It's been hitting record highs for the past, 2 weeks? So, yeah, no, there's something else going on. So our debt continues to increase, and so do our interest payments. I believe our current interest payments around $2.5 billion at a paltry 1.5% interest. And that is just the interest, nothing to principal. What happens when interest rates finally increase up to 3%, if they ever do? I mean, you're looking at $600 billion just for the interest. I mean, again, I don't think we have to worry about rates at 3 to 4% yet. I think it's all going to fall apart prior to that, but rates will begin to increase. But a lot of that debt is going to be defaulted on. But when you have that kind of payment, we see things get neglected. Education, infrastructure, the military. And we've seen all this. What taxes are going to have to continue to go up. Taxes are never going to go down. I don't care what Republicans says they're going to tax, cut rates, cut taxes. Taxes have to go up. So government will either default or they're going to have to start cutting federal spending. And which do you think is likely the course of action from the federal government? So if we continue to borrow and drive up that deficit, then we're talking trillions of dollars in interest payments. What would we have to grow this economy? You're looking at 5%. Do you think that's going to happen anytime soon? Plus, the real debt is much closer to $100 trillion when all debt and obligations are factored in. When the financial house comes tumbling down, war is usually the next thing. It's a cycle. Or maybe war is first. But folks, you really do need to get prepared. We have the debt storm will wipe out fiat currencies, and the only real money will be left standing is gold and silver. And when that dollar comes crashing down, then they will force upon us a global base currency. The government will take much of your 401k, your retirement accounts, and any savings that you have. All fiat currencies, based on nothing but the faith of the government, have crashed. And this is no time different. We got a nice little package today. My favorite fractional piece is an AU $5 Liberty gold piece, an AU $5 Liberty gold piece. They're beautiful, dated prior to 1907. And I think right now, if you already have your gold and silver and you're just adding to your portfolio, a 1 ounce platinum bar is available, $20 over spot. This little package together, it includes all your shipping costs, is $1,540. An AU $5 Liberty gold piece, 1 ounce platinum bar, includes your shipping for $1,540. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Alfred and James will be joining you, so make sure you stay tuned. Thank you.
financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett, calling in from Japan. He runs the Corbett Report at thecorbettreport.com. Independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics, and he's also editorial writer for the International Forecaster. Plus podcasts, videos, articles. We see James all over the internet if you want to look for him. He's all over. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be back with you.
Good. Got an article here from Breitbart. Just came out today. And the headline is, Obama administration and UN announce global police force to fight extremism in the United States. On Wednesday, Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced that at the United Nations that her office would be working in several American cities to form what she called the Strong Cities Network, a law enforcement initiative that would encompass the globe. This amounts to nothing less than the overriding of American laws, up to and including the United States Constitution, in favor of the United Nations laws that would henceforth be implemented in the United States itself without any consultation of Congress at all. Is this something you're aware of? Have you heard this previously?
Are you absolutely sure that that article is from today?
It says Wednesday. She made the announcement on Wednesday, and it's in Breitbart today, so far as I understand.
Interesting. Well, It's interesting because I remember last October when this was a story as well, and it was, or maybe September, it was around the time of the UN General Assembly, which was usually September, right, that they made the original announcement, and I remember Loretta Lynch being involved in that original announcement about the Strong Cities Network, and I covered it at the time on Ground Zero Radio with Clyde Lewis. We had a talk about this, so this is not new
news.
You may
be right.
Perhaps
it might be that this is several months old, and I don't know, it just showed up as a new article in
From Fashion to Planes.
Trying to remember which publication I pulled this out of, but yes,
I'm looking at an example of this right now. It says on Wednesday, Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced. But when you click on the on Wednesday, it actually takes you back to October 2015. So this is a several month old story that's being regenerated right now for some reason. But
mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, what do you think?
It is an interesting development. I think it's a bit too far to say that this is a global police force at this moment, or is really going to be that way. It's certainly envisioned to be some sort of link between these various cities that are going to work more on cracking down on extremism. And what is extremism is really the operative question. Of course, that's always in the eyes of the beholder, and if the beholder is the Obama administration.
Anything that's contrary to what the government says, that's extremism.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. So that's something definitely that we should be concerned about. But I see the development of this.
If you're looking at the same article that I saw, the photograph is, I don't know, 50 UN soldiers marching in lockstep, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly give you the impression that they are intending to put boots on the ground. I don't know that they said that, but that's the impression from the photograph and so much of the article as I've saw. Do you think that is really what's going to happen, or are they just, is this just an information sharing network?
Yeah, I don't think, well, that photograph obviously is just for illustrative purposes and probably mm-hmm. not representative of what they're saying. People can go to the justice.gov website and look at the actual speech that Loretta Lynch gave talking about the Strong Cities Network. It was at the UN General Assembly on September 29th of 2015, but nowhere in there does it actually say that this is a United Nations body. It was launched at the UN, or it was the speech was given at the United Nations General Assembly, but it's not formally, I think, connected to the United Nations. It is formally, this Strong Cities Network is formally run by, or is the brainchild of, something called the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, which is at strategicdialogue.org. And when you go there and click on the About to find the Board of Trustees, you'll see it's people like the CEO of Oceania Investment, the CEO of Axel Springer, the president and director of research at Shane Capital Management, the former chief of the defense staff of Britain. Various people, high-ranking financiers and government officials, mostly from the UK. So make of that what you will, but clearly there is some might, some power behind this. It's not just a bunch of people coming up with, just an idea off the top of their head. But as far as I know, it's not formally
connected. They must not be economists then.
Well, not the good kind anyway.
Another article from Technocracy News. This one says China plans to replace millions of low-paid workers with robots. As a technocracy, China is showing its proclivity for efficiency regardless of cost to humans, meaning they plan to employ millions of robots, and they're planning to do this by 2020. Now, robots appear to be an idea whose time has come. Can any concerns about the humanity of people who are working for next to nothing and sweeping floors and whatever, can any concerns about their humanity and unemployment stop the rush to robots? You think robots can be slowed down at all, or is this just something you have to have if you want to maintain, if you want to be competitive?
Well, from the history that I learned from Star Trek VI. So take of it what you will. But the word sabotage comes when workers, intimidated by the rise of the new manufacturing machines back in the Industrial Revolution, threw their wooden shoes called sabots into the machinery to stop it from working. Sabotage. Again, I'm not sure if that's the real etymology, but at any rate, I think that's the right idea.
I've heard
idea.
The same thing, and I've heard it for a long time.
Of course, 20, 30 years ago. And we can look at the Luddites and other movements like that in the past that have been afraid of technology. I think there's always that fear of encroaching technology because there are people who are always crushed under the wheels of the progress, if you want to call it that, towards a more mechanistic society, people who basically fall through the cracks. That has never in history stopped technology from progressing, however. And I don't believe that we are at a point where we can derail the automation of manual labor. It is happening right now, and it is accelerating right now. And if China is looking into this, it is only, I think, the natural response to a country that is now facing the loss of its own manufacturing base to companies like Adidas, who, as we've talked about before, is now moving their plant back to Germany in order to replace workers with robots. It is happening. And I think there's
and the competition,
it's like the
forces. If you want to be in the game, you've got to got to use robots.
Right. And if you're it's not like a currency war. It's the race to the bottom. If everyone else is doing it, then the only way to lose is to be the last one to do it. So there is a certain logic to it, at any rate, and I don't know how that could be derailed at this point. The even more cynical side of all of this is that clearly you're expressing what I think a lot of people feel, which is the unease that a lot of people feel with these developments because it means so many workers will be fall between the cracks. So we have this concern for them, and I think governments are going to play on that concern to basically broaden the tax base. I believe we've talked about before the EU is now looking into and has produced a white paper on the idea of taxing robots, of making companies
pay for social security
for the robots as a way of paying into the system so that they can take care, supposedly, so they can take care of the workers. But we all know how those types of programs don't generally tend to do what they're advertised as doing. It's just a tax grab by the government. So I think the governments are going to play on that fear to try to expand their tax base while they can. But in the long run, I don't see a way around this. I don't know how this could be derailed at this point.
Yeah. I understand that you can't beat the efficiency. That's if they are more efficient, significantly more efficient than people, if they are more cost effective, it's going to happen. But what is going to happen to the people who don't have jobs? And how are we going to deal with that? Put everybody on welfare? Can we all live in the workers' paradise finally when the robots do all the work and all we have to do is work? Watch Dancing with the Stars or something like that?
That would be the ideal, I suppose. I'm not sure that
is what Marx had in mind when he said you have to own the means of production, we'll own the robots, and we can all watch Dancing with the Stars.
Right, and the state will fade away by itself, right? It's mind-boggling to contemplate because I think what we're facing here is not just the automation of mechanical manual labor, which we've seen to some extent over the past half century, but now we're looking at the automation of jobs that were previously thought unautomatable. I recently did a story on New World Next Week, my video series with James Evan Pilato. We covered an office in the UK, I can't remember exactly where, Milton Keynes perhaps, where they now have a office manager robot that can physically go around the office and collect information from people, organize schedules, do all the kind of menial administrative types of things that keep the office running. Well, that is now being automated. Service jobs are being increasingly automated, as people have seen in McDonald's and KFC and other places worldwide are rolling out these basically robot, order from a machine kind of things. This is happening more and more, and they're starting to talk about even knowledge-based jobs, jobs that require, the ability to write sentences and put together a paragraph to explain something. Even that is becoming within the realm of what can be automated by artificial intelligence. And to the extent that you now have robo-journalists that can put together short news blurbs about breaking news stories in an automated fashion without a human being writing them. And that's obviously just going to accelerate as well. So we're now truly facing the point where humans as a whole are starting to become obsolete, not just manual labor, but humans themselves. That's a revolution on a scale that has never occurred in human history. I can't think of anything to compare that to. And I don't think anyone has a handle on how we could comfortably transition from here to there. I think, unfortunately, again, as I believe we've talked about before, this raises the specter of what a lot of very rich and powerful people have talked about at length and ad nauseum in the past, which is, well, we don't need as many humans on the planet anymore.
Yeah.
How many do we need?
Eaters.
Exactly what they say. Yeah.
Yep. And to find this story coming out of China is surprising to me. I mean, you've got a communist country. They're supposed to be worried about the people. There are going to be a bunch of poor people in China that are all of a sudden going to be perhaps even poorer. And that's going to, they say here that the government's plan will be crucial to broader effort to reform China's economy, while also meeting the ambitious production goals laid out in the latest economic blueprint, which aims to double per capita income by 2020. That's 4 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to double per capita income by 2020? I mean, is that even possible?
If you greatly reduce the population, you improve those per capitas, right?
Well, maybe that's part of it, huh?
It's the old central planning thing where, you know, if you need to make a certain number of nails, you just make them smaller. If the nails have to be a certain size, then you just make fewer of them. No matter how you try to categorize and quantify and make ratios and quotas, people will find a way around it.
Yeah, I understand. There's another one from Michael Snyder. We'll probably talk about this. We'll take a break here in a couple of minutes, but this will probably extend into the next segment of the program. Michael Snyder writes an article, Reshaping Turkey and Erdogan's Image, 50,000 Purged. Barack Obama's friend in Turkey is a deeply corrupt radical Islamic dictator that has just staged a coup to consolidate his grip on power. 1,845 journalists, writers, and critics have been arrested for insulting President Erdogan over the past 2 years. And a couple of years ago, he had a monstrous 1,100-room presidential palace built for himself that is 30 times larger than the White House. The article goes on and says, with each passing day, more evidence emerges, which seems to indicate that the recent coup was a staged event meant to enable Erdogan and his allies to eliminate their enemies and solidify their stranglehold on the nation. First question from my mind is, does Erdogan really have a stranglehold on the nation? Because it seems that the result of this supposed coup was defeated by massive public support for Erdogan. Is there really massive public support for Erdogan? And if there is it fair to say he has a stranglehold over the nation?
Well, I think it's important that we don't binarize this too categorically, because what we have is not obviously, I mean, I don't think, well, I'm certainly not saying that Erdogan is a good guy. Certainly he isn't, and the way he's running the country is not something that we would want to see, you know, anywhere. But that doesn't mean that his opposition are the good guys and the democracy freedom fighters. And I just had a lengthy conversation with Sibel Edmonds about this on my YouTube channel a few days ago, where we talked about this and what's really happening here. Because about 6 or 7 months ago, we had a conversation, me and Sibel, about there is a coup that's going to be coming in Turkey, and it's going to be instigated by the NATO CIA faction that, to a large extent, runs or at least dictates what happens with the Turkish military. So
let's talk about that a little more in a moment. We're going to have to take a break for a couple of commercials. James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com, and I will return in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T. We're talking about the recent coup in Turkey. James, you were going to say something about your recent conversation with Sibel. What's her last name? Well, James, are you still there? Well, Houston, we
I'm here now. Sorry. Sibel Edmonds, E-D-M-O-N-D-S. Yes.
All right.
Edmonds. Let's talk about, because this is, I mean, there's a lot to go into here. It's difficult to summarize. But ultimately, in Turkey, you have three main competing factions at this moment. You have the AKP party, the ruling party headed by Erdogan, which is obviously the what is formally in charge of the political structure of the country. But you also have the Kemalists, the nationalists in the military, who are generally in control of the military structure, who are, at the very least, very supportive of NATO. Really, it, to a large extent, one would say that NATO calls the shots or decides or has the final veto on what the military is or is not going to do in the country, and has had that relationship for a good long time. And the third faction is the Gulenists. This is the movement created by or founded around Fethullah Gulen, an imam, who now resides in Pennsylvania, of all places. He was a Turkish cleric who had to flee Turkey because he was accused of wanting to overthrow the government and replace it with an Islamic state, basically. So he flew to Pennsylvania and was given his green card and everything with the help of certain people like CIA agent. The name is going to elude me. Graham. The name is going to slip my mind. But anyway, people like that vouched for Fethullah Gulen as he flew to Pennsylvania and became a U.S. green card holder, where he now resides and presides over a multi-billion. His net fortune is estimated somewhere between $20 and $28 billion. He runs this transnational religious and social movement called the Gulen Movement, which includes a bunch of madrasas that have been set up in a number of countries, including a lot of countries where the U.S. happens to have geopolitical interests. So I think you see where I'm going with this.
I do.
The implications are quite clear that Gulen has the support of the deep state in the United States NATO establishment, the CIA NATO, and that it is used as a type of fifth column within Turkey to rein in the AKP, the ruling political party, when it is and if needed. So that it's interesting, if you look at the mainstream Western coverage of Erdogan in years past, if you look, you know, five years ago, you'll see Erdogan was the golden boy of the West. He was promoted as this great, you know, voice for democracy in Turkey. And he's, you know, he's a great leader and he can bring Turkey around to the 21st century and all of this. And now, of course, Erdogan is, you know, Erdogan, and everyone understands that he's a horrible dictator and all of that. How did that transition take place? Was it a transition in Erdogan himself, or was it a transition in the narrative in Turkey that's amenable to outside interests? And I think what we see is that NATO, the NATO-CIA faction, which, as I say, if not directly controls the Turkish military, at least has certain very strong influence over the Turkish military and over the Gulenist faction, has decided that it's Erdogan's time to go and that they want to replace him. So again, this doesn't mean that Erdogan is a good guy and that we should be happy for him. But I think the Turkish people, to a large extent, there's a large base there in Turkey that understands that there is a deep state that does conspire against the Turkish government and that is largely directed by these foreign elements that they want to react against. So I'm not sure that the outpouring of support for the current government is necessarily love for Erdogan so much as we want to determine our own political future. So I think that's what that represents. But when it comes to this coup attempt last week and what it represents and who was behind it, it's very strange. I think the only viable interpretations are that either Erdogan knew of this beforehand and allowed it to happen, but obviously taking certain precautions to make sure that he'd be okay, but allowed it to happen so that he could benefit from the crackdown, or that it was staged by Erdogan himself, which is now the type of conspiracy theory, quote unquote, that would be unthinkable in any other context unless this was someone who's, you know, on the U.S. hit list. And then it's perfectly okay for mainstream media to run with these types of theories. That's fine. But it would be unthinkable in any other context.
The article I've looked at, I'm looking at right now, it says soldiers that took part in the coup claimed that they thought they were taking part in a military exercise. And those running the coup allowed Erdogan's plane to fly across the country without incident. Apparently, they were in a position of shooting down if they wanted to, but they didn't, which is consistent with the idea this was a staged event, assuming these are true stories in the first place.
Yes.
I mean, did the soldiers really think they were took place in just a military exercise, or did they think they were really involved in a coup? And whatever they thought, according to Michael Snyder, so far at least 50,000 people have been rounded up or stripped of their position since the coup. All right, 50,000 people. It includes police officers, it includes soldiers, it includes journalists. I'm not sure. Do you think that 50,000 is a credible number?
I don't know where Michael Snyder is getting the 50,000. I've seen a lot of numbers bandied around in the last few days, and I'm sure that number is increasing. I have seen 9,000 as the largest number so far, so I'm not sure where 50,000 is coming from, but maybe that includes other sectors of society that most of these estimates aren't including. Again, I'd have to look into that number more deeply. The idea that this might have been, or the people involved in this coup attempt might have believed that they were participating in an exercise is at least plausible. It certainly could be true. But again, as you say, it depends, I mean, to the extent that this can be taken as the serious word of these people. That source, the source for that claim that these soldiers are claiming this is the Hurriyet Daily News, the Hurriyet newspaper, which is connected to the Gulenists, clearly sympathetic to Gulen and his movement. So if Gulen is orchestrating a kind of overthrow of Erdogan, you would expect disinformation or strategically placed misinformation to be part of their campaign. So you have to worry about sources and where things are coming from. So again, there's a lot of fog of war around this, and I don't take anything for granted here. It certainly could be possible that there were military that believed they were taking part in an exercise, but maybe that's just something they're claiming to try to get out of the hot water.
I consider the 50,000, and I think to myself, these 50,000 that are removed probably have wives or spouses and children. We're talking about 50,000 adults. We're not talking about 50,000 children. We're probably not talking about 50,000 senior citizens. Is this bad politics? Is this something necessary? Is it something crazy? Is it something self-destructive to purge 50,000, maybe more? Can Erdogan get away with that? If he's got a wife and two or three kids, each of them, we're talking about, who knows, 250,000, half a million people are going to be directly affected by these purges, and they're not going to be happy with Erdogan. Is this bad politics?
In the normal course of things, in a normal political environment, in a democracy or whatever passes for one, yes, that would, of course, be that would be something that would alienate a large section of the population. But, of course, what we see happening right now is that Erdogan has just declared a state of emergency, which will, for I believe 3 months, but one can imagine how that state of emergency can be extended and extended and extended, as is happening in France right now. So that we'll have to see how much power Erdogan actually takes as a result of this, and whether there will be anything even approaching a democracy after this is all said and done. To a certain extent, Turkish democracy, to the extent, again, that it exists. I mean, the last military coup was in, I believe, 1989, and there have been several before that point. So it is a coup-prone state, and not a very stable, long-functioning democracy. But also, that's been changing as Erdogan was previously the prime minister, where previously the real power in the Turkish government lied. He had to step down to take the presidential role, which is previously been a more ceremonial kind of role, but now he is making that into the center of power in the Turkish government. So I think it's all being made up on the fly, and one can certainly see how Erdogan will definitely benefit in this in the short term, to the extent that he's able to claw kind of dictatorial powers out of this. But in the long term, I still think that there are very powerful and very large interests that are conspiring to get rid of him. And clearly, I think the opinion of the mass of the world right now is very lopsidedly against him, which doesn't tend to work out for leaders like Hussein or Gaddafi or Assad. I think Erdogan has basically been added to that list.
What about the relationship between Turkey and the European Union? Is this going to be adversely affected, where maybe people are going to say, wait a second, we need stronger barriers between Turkey and the EU, or is it a non-event? Not significant?
Oh, it is definitely an event of significance when it comes to that relationship. Turkey has previously been a member in waiting, trying to get into the European Union. I think any idea that that's going to happen anytime soon is off the table, certainly while Erdogan is in power. If for no other reason, then apparently Erdogan is at least contemplating, according to some sources, I'm not sure if this is actually preceded, but is at least contemplating bringing back the death penalty in Turkey, which I think invalidates it for membership in the European Union, or at any rate would make it politically unviable. Again, things are on the move, but clearly this puts a giant wedge between Turkey and Europe. And it's interesting that this comes shortly after Turkey basically brokered that deal with Merkel, who is the European Union at this point, more or less, to get basically a payoff to stop allowing these refugees across the border and into Europe. That was basically the deal that happened. They paid Turkey, I can't remember how many billions, I think it was $6 billion or something like that, basically as protection money to say, okay, stop letting these people through, and we'll all be okay. Well, he got his money, he got his payout, and at this point, I'm not sure he really needs anything else from the European Union, and I don't think he'd be expected to get it at any point in his current tenure.
We've got an article here from something called the Free Thought Project, and the headline is, Breaking 28 Pages Show U.S. News Saudis Aided 9/11 Attackers and Covered It Up. Have you read the 28 pages that have been recently released that were part of the 9/11 report that were?
I have, yes. I have not read through them in enough detail yet. I'm still pouring through all of the details of the details. But I can tell you that this is a significant event in, at the very least, the battle for the hearts and minds of people who are still believers wholesale in what we've been told about 9/11, this is definitive proof that the U.S. government has actively been working for the past 14 years since the Joint Commission initially let out its report, for at least 14 years, to cover up people who are implicated in being involved with what happened on 9/11. I don't think that this is the full story, the whole be-all and end-all of that story, but at any rate, it is black and white definitive proof that the U.S. government actively conspired to hide these links from the American people and to continue to support the very people who were implicated in this, which is, I mean, mind-boggling if you were to go back 15 years and ask the American people, you know, so if Saudi Arabia was implicated in this, do you think we should be going after them? Should we be friends with them? I think you would have gotten a very definitive no response. And yet, that's exactly what's happened. And ultimately, U.S.-Saudi relations are still, I mean, there's still no change in the formal diplomatic stance, and they're still allies, and we still sell them all sorts of weapons each and every year in record amounts in recent years. So it's very strange, isn't it? It's very strange. The only possible way to reconcile this new information is to say that the U.S. government, at the very least, at the very, very least, covered up information about who was behind the attacks after the fact. And I think there's obviously, again, much more to the 9/11 story, but this is part of it.
There's been a movement to get this information released to the public for, I assume, years. I don't know how long this has been going on. Did this movement finally succeed and they just overpowered the resistance to concealing this information? Or are we looking at evidence of a growing animosity between the United States and Saudi Arabia? Did somebody say, turn this loose, it'll change American opinion on Saudi Arabia, and we can kick them around however we need to kick them?
Yes. I mean, there can be no other explanation than that second explanation that you offer, because there is nothing that has changed in any of the intervening 14 years in terms of the information itself or its importance or relevance. There was no new event per se that kicked off this latest momentum behind the release of the 28 pages. And it hasn't been a secret what is in the 28 pages for the entirety of the time that they've been classified. I vividly recall seeing back 14 years ago, when the report was first released on the Canadian news networks, they were talking about there are 28 redacted pages that talk about foreign complicity or foreign assistance in the attack. Widely believed to be pointing a finger at Saudi Arabia, and that's exactly what was in
it. Well, that's true. That's true. I've been aware of it. I'm not a student of this particular issue, but I've been aware for, I don't know, several years at least, that the Saudi Arabia was implicated and that involvement was concealed by our own government. But we're out of time, James. I want to thank you again for being on the program. Look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks. Interesting, fascinating. TheCorbettReport.com, folks. Corbett, report.com. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.